Blog Talk Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. Hope everyone's having a great week so far, and I hope you all have a better week to follow. Hey, Pam, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. It's a bit humid for my taste, but I'm not going to complain too much. It could be worse. You know, at least we don't have that 90-degree weather. Had a nice, relaxing day. Good stuff. How about you? How are you doing?
Yeah, it's a pretty good day. Pretty good day. I finally got my nap. You know, I've been working.
Oh,
I worked on that.
Nice.
I did.
You worked hard on that nap. Yeah.
I did. Yeah. I tell you, I kept trying. It wasn't happening. But, I finally got it, so life is good. Of course, I still want more because I'm greedy like that. Anyway, so tell me. Let's see, we have Laron on the line. I'm going to pick him up, and then you can tell me all about this contest. Good deal?
Sure.
Hello, Laron.
Hey, Laron.
Hey, how you doing, Pam, partner? Hello, Jean, other partner.
The dynamic duo. That's
so
awesome. Yeah. So Pam, where did this idea for this contest come from?
Well, it came from where it usually comes from. I just kind of stumbled over it. Mythology is one of my favorite things to read about. And I think I was on the website GreekGodsAndGoddesses.org or something like that. Which is an actual website, and you can get pretty much any kind of mythology, Greek mythology you can find on there. And I was reading about, I was reading about tricksters, and it dawned on me that pretty much every single culture in the world has some sort of trickster within its mythology. There's the Greeks, the Romans, Native American, Hispanic,
right.
African, everywhere you go in the world, you can pretty much find a trickster, either mythological or actual, people that would have been considered tricksters, even ancient Germanics. I think sisters would be a really fun thing for the couple of Twisted Sisters and maybe a Twisted Mister or two to delve into. I mean, it fits. Twisted Tuesdays, Twisted Sisters, Twisted Misters, Twisted Tricksters. And say that five times fast.
I couldn't get through the first time.
Say this one time fast, okay? Twisted Sisters going to town. Twisted Sisters boogieing down. Twisted Sisters in need of a mister. Twisted Sisters love Twisted Misters.
That would definitely have my tongue wrapped around my head. Oh, my gosh. I actually put up a link to a Wikipedia page that has a list of fictional tricksters. Yeah. And... But then I put up some artwork and some links to the individual ones, though not every single one because there's so many out there. But
right.
I put up a few quotes, and I told people if they wanted to write to a trickster that was, or just the theme of it,
right.
That wasn't presented in the contest, they could do that. And an example of one of the quotes that I put up was the header quote, "The trickster's function is to break taboos, create mischief, stir things up. In the end, the trickster gives people what they really want, some sort of freedom." So that's our theme for tonight. No specific artist. It's just really all about tricksters. So I think it's going to be interesting and fun.
Okay. Well, we're the Twisted Tricksters. I like it. All good.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know, but I'm here. I looked at the clock when you said, "Are you awake?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And I said, "Oh, yes, I'm awake." And I looked at the clock and said, "Oh, my God, well, I guess maybe that's why she's asking." And he's a left hand. Too funny.
I thought, well, it's like about less than 2 minutes to, and I should message her and find out if she's awake. But that's okay, because I actually tried calling 5 minutes to, and I thought we were having blog talk problem again, but it turned out I just needed to put minutes on my phone, so I had to, you know, quick grab the debit card, dial the number, answer all the questions, then call in, and flying by the seat of our pants.
Okay. Well, I am at your disposal. Whatever we're doing, we're doing. So you just tell me.
Right. Well, I think we'll go ahead and we'll start out, of course, with a classic poem, which is Pan in Wall Street by Edmund Clarence Stedman. And Laurent, would you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. By my glasses, I'll get a whole lot of hunger. Pan in Wall Street, just where the treasuries and marble front looks over Wall Street's mingled nations, where Jews and Gentiles most are wont to throng for trade and last quotations, where hour by hour the rates of gold outrival in the ears of people, the quarter chimes serenely told from Trinity's undaunted steeple. Even there I heard a strange, wild strain, sound high above the modern clamor, above the cries of greed and gain, the curbstone war, the auction's hammer. And swift, on music's misty ways, it led from all this strife for millions to ancient, sweet, do-nothing days among the kirtle-robed Sicilians. And as it stilled the multitude, and yet more joyous rose and shriller, I saw the minstrel where he stood, at ease against a Doric pillar. One hand a droning organ played, the other held a pan's pipe, fashioned like those of old, to lips that made the reeds give out that strain in passing. Was Pan himself had wandered here, a strolling through the sordid city, and piping to the civic ear the prelude of some pastoral ditty. The demigod had crossed the seas from haunts of shepherd, nymph, and satyr, and the Syracusan times to these, our shores and 20 centuries later. A ragged cap was on his head, but hidden thus was no doubting that all with crispy looks o'erspread, his gnarled horns were somewhere sprouting. His club feet, cased in rusty shoes, were crossed, as on some frieze you see them, and trousers patched of divers hues concealed his crooked shanks beneath them. He filled the quivering reeds with sound, and o'er his mouth their changes shifted, and with his goat eyes looked around. Rarer the passing current drifted, and soon as on the Trinacrian hills and the nymphs and herdsmen ran to hear him. Even now the tradesmen from their tills, with clerks and porters crowded near him. The bulls and bears together drew from jauncy court to new street alley, as erst, if pastorals be true, came beasts from every wooded valley. The random passers slayed to list, a boxer Aegon rough and merry, a Broadway Daphnis on his tryst, with Nace at the Brooklyn Ferry. And one-eyed Sockops halted long in tattered cloak of army pattern. And Galatea joined the throngs, a blousy apple vending slattern, while old Salinas staggered out from some newfangled lunch-house handy and bade the piper with a shout to strike up Yankee Doodle Dandy. A newsboy and a peanut girl, like little fronds, began to caper. His hair was all in tangled curl, her tawny legs were bare and taper, and still the gathering larger grew and gave its pence and crowded higher, while I, the shepherd minstrel, blew his pipe and struck the gamut higher. O heart of nature, beating still with throbs her vernal passion talking, even here as on the vine-clad hill, for by the Arthusian water, new forms may fold the speech, new lands arise within these ocean portals. But music waves eternal wands, enchantress of the souls of mortals. So thought I that among us trod a man in blue with a legal baton, and scoffed a vagrant demigod, and pushed him from the step I set. Doubting, I mused upon the cry, great man is dead, and all the people went on their ways, and clear and high, a quarter sounded from the steeple. End poem.
Great read there, Laurent. And I have to say that I know that was a little bit longer of a classic poem than I usually have, but this one for the topic just really spoke to me. I love the rhyme and flow and the imagery and the whole message and idea of Pan, the god of nature and a great deity, a deity of lust and vigor and desire and passion, going onto Wall Street. And, for some reason, I just found this very, both entertaining and thought-provoking, and thought it fit very well with the prompts for tonight. And Jean, your thoughts on this classic poem?
Well, I have to agree with you. There's a lot going on in it, and I think it encompassed a lot. Nobody expects. If Pan hits Wall Street, I mean, I would expect all hell to break loose. You know, that's the way I would say it. But,
right?
It really was a good take on the prompt tonight, you know, because the prompt comes from so many different directions. This was just another one. So, yeah, it was a good piece. And it was a great read, Laurent. So, I kept going, wow. And I looked down and I said, oh, my gosh. But it's a great piece. So why not, right? Why not? I never heard of Edmund Clarence Denton.
That knocked my battery down to 40%.
Oh, he's so
funny. Oh, my goodness.
I'm not sure I was ready for the length this early. So, you know, Dean's going to have to take up the slack and read something with more than six lines.
Something more than six lines.
You know, when it's him and Rex on any given day with me, usually Friday, you know, when I pull up the piece and it's short, of course, they both fall into stitches. I'm reading the
right.
But I don't always do that. Sometimes I read seven long. Yeah. Right, Pam? You've seen me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Well, I know, like, if I'm on a show alone with Rex, like, to say I'm filling in for a rhythm and rhyme, if we get to a short ride, I'm like, well, since Gene's not here, I'm going to take this.
I'm not even around. Oh boy,
she is legend.
Pretty much.
Yep.
There's a short
exactly.
Girl. That must be genius. Yeah. I could just do cameos on all the shows and read the short poems. I could do that.
There you go. There you go. Cameos. I like that idea. So, Laurent,
absolutely.
You did do a great read of this. What was your thoughts on this classic poem?
My thought is that constructing a poem like this is work. It's not short. It's lengthy. You've got long sentences, lots of multisyllabic words. And to get the flow is definitely, to me, a construction job. You have to build each line, giving it presence, giving it the right rhyme, giving it the syllabic talent, because you can't really abandon the rhythm with a poem like this. It has to have a flow that carries through, and this does. I'll tell you what, when you write a poem of this length, yeah, it's poetry, yes, it's inspiration, but it's work. You have to be a good craftsman. You have to be ready to throw words out and use words, and I'll tell you what, the vocabulary is broad in this piece. There's a lot of mythological references, place names, et cetera, people names. It's really very, very impressive.
Oh, I have to agree. Definitely an intelligent piece. So, great comment. All right. And up next, we have Fake Tricks by Garanwi. Behind the mask of Caliban, deceived in Propero's books, a two-faced Janus pretends to be a fool, waving his rattling stick to make you look the other way, with pickpocketing distraction, told as a joke of freedom from behind a barricade made from a feast of lies, in a belief you can fool all of the people with a gobbled screen of truth, a wonbon Joey in grease paint for disguise with a slapstick face painted on eggshell, offering an atheist salvation of I can play at being God in my promises of redemption. Read between the lines as the mask revolves to show a pirate's skull and crossbones flag. Will the deception be complete? Will the trickster win the day? Only you can say. End poem. And Laurent, your thoughts on this poem?
I like Fake Tricks. I'm not sure. Juan Bon Jovi is a play on words off of Juan Bon Jovi. I'm not sure. If it is, that's cutely done. Waving his rattling stick to make you look the other way with pickpocketing distraction. Told as a joke of freedom from a barricade made from a feast of lies and a belief you could fool all the people with a Goebbels grain of truth. This is a beautiful description of a trickster who knows that you can tell a lie and make it very believable if you only add a little bit of truth to it. Once the truth is there, everything else follows and you're successful. So when he says, will the deception be complete? Will the trickster win the day? Only you can say, well, you know, he's doing his job right. Yes, he can fool the people. I like the pieces.
Absolutely. Me too. Yeah, great observations there. Yeah, I was looking up a lot of the words in this poem, which, you know, earlier, and I couldn't particularly find anything much about wonbon, other than that it's a Korean word that means original. And but where wonbon
Joey
comes
is a
in,
kangaroo.
Huh. Yeah, that is true. Joey is a baby kangaroo. I didn't think about that. So maybe it's putting the two words together. I don't know, but it's interesting. That is for sure. And I do appreciate poems where I get to learn things, or at the very least, an opportunity to think. So, you know. And Jean, your thoughts?
Don't mind me. I thought this was a thought-provoking piece, and it was well penned. There's a lot of references, you know me, right? I'm usually not on the money, but it is interesting. A wonbon Joey in grease paint for disguise with a slapstick face painted on eggshell. Interesting. It is a mask, apparently, you know, the eggshell being what I would consider the medium for the mask. But I don't know. It's interesting. It really is. And I really would need to sit and think about it in order to come up with better than that. But I did think it was nicely put together, and there was a certain flow to it as well. You know, it was good in my ear, if that makes any sense. You know, because usually that's what gets.
Absolutely.
Nicely done piece. I'll have to check it out again later.
Yeah, it definitely is one of those that needs to be read more than once. But I do like all the references. Caliban and Properos were both characters from The Tempest. You know, Janus, of course, the goddess or the god of doorways. I recognize Goebbels, although I'm not 100% sure on the pronunciation, which I should find out, only because our upcoming. Oh, what is it?
Goebbels.
Okay, okay. Yep, I recognized him as one of the prompts we're using for the upcoming Nazi Germany and Holocaust contest. He was actually in charge of the what's that word I'm looking for? Like promoting, you know,
propaganda.
I hate when my mind blanks out, but thank you. Yeah, he was in charge of the propaganda for the Nazi, so I recognize that. So I recognize that this is speaking on people who, you know, it speaks on people who put up those propagandas, those lies, those twists. You know, it's definitely got a political and social feel to it. I thought it was quite a clever write, wonderful references, and I did really like waving his rattling stick to make you look the other way with pickpocketing distraction. You know, wonderful write and very well done. All right. And let's see what we have next.
I hope it doesn't have more than six lines.
I think it has like eight.
Oh my gosh.
14. It's a degenerate jokester by Creatistically Inclined. And go ahead, Gene.
Okay. And as Pam said, it's degenerate jokester by Creatistically Inclined. That was six lines worth of reading right there. Anyway, just plain. A sliver of a grin beneath the chilly brush, beside my cheek tucked into darkness. Something stirs, something tickles at my nerve. A cackling heckler, chuckling jackal, lacking common decency, inhibition and latency. In good spirit, a bit of fun, 'twas all in jest. Thrills and frills, no harm done. Entertainment for the sake of one. And so on.
Great read, Gene. I thought this one was wonderfully entertaining by Creatistically Inclined. A fun humor brevity. I like that she puts in her AN, inspired by all the tricksters of lore, as well as the practical jokers in my life. And me personally, I think practical jokes can be fun, but you have to do it at the right time to the right people. And you can't, you know, like I never believe in, you know, being cruel with humor, but I think, you know, practical jokes can be fun. Like I love April Fool's Day. So most of the things I do on April Fool's Day used to have to do with food. Like I used to love to bake meatloaf and, you know, make it look like the cupcakes and or one time I actually, you just do these different, like make these different foods that look like funny things and then watch the kids and it's just so much fun. But you know, she does make a good point because while, you know, some joking around can be fun. You have to be aware that not everybody thinks that. As she puts in quotation marks, in good spirit, a bit of fun, 'twas all in jest, thrills and frills, no harm done, and then add entertainment for the sake of one. So you really want to be, when you're playing the trickster, you know, when you're having the jokes and having the fun, you've really got to pay attention to whether you're having that laugh for yourself at the expense of someone else's comfort, you know, and how they feel. So, but great write and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I think the best kind of practical joke is the one that causes both parties to laugh. And you're right. If it's simply one person who gets off and really bothers the comfort zone of the other person, That is indeed entertainment for the sake of one. I've seen some good practical jokes. I've seen some nasty ones. I remember as a boy camper raiding the girls' camp across the lake distorting the sheets, stretching cellophane across toilet seats, and cutting all the strings that turn the lights on. We thought that was very, very, very funny practical joking, but we were tongue-lashed the next morning. Other people did not find it funny. Anytime you sit down in a toilet seat as a woman and pee, and there's a cellophane stretched across it, it's not a comfortable situation. And when you're done with that and Frank crawling into bed with short sheets, that's not a comfortable situation. And when you go to turn the light on to see what the hell is going on, and you can't, that's not a fun thing either.
That is for sure. That is for sure. No, I remember one time me and my sister went camping, like, out by my grandma's cabin. And this is in the middle of the woods in Wisconsin. So it's not like, you know, we're at, like, some, you know, like, campground. We're in the middle of the woods practically. And my brother and my cousins showed up. And, of course, they had to do the whole, like, shake the tent, growl like a bear thing. And...
But I was thinking, you said in the middle of the woods in Wisconsin, I'm thinking, and the bears?
With the bears.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, they got the same tongue lashing. So, and, but, Gene, you did a wonderful read of this. Your thoughts?
Thank you. And so, yeah, I just have to say out loud that none of that story Laurent just told surprises me in the least. Not at all. But I did like this poem. I really thought that it covered a lot. And I like the use of the short lines in the poem. I think that it really worked with what was being said. And I'm with you. I really like that last stanza. In good spirit, a bit of fun, 'twas all in jest, thrills and throes, no harm done. Entertainment for the sake of one. You know, it's just for the sake of one, but I'm sure by the looks of things, you know, no harm done. There was more than one person laughing and all this crazy. But, you know, sometimes it backfires. Sometimes people just aren't in the mood, and then they're cranky.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. What one person finds funny, someone else might not.
Amen. Amen.
And up next, we have The Man Who Gave Birth by Big E2. And go ahead, Lauren, and give that a read, please.
This is going to be dangerous to read. I need to know. No, okay.
No, not at all.
The man who gave birth. They called it Prosh Week at uni, the time for trickery. The smartest and the wildest students planned the most outlandish pranks, far better than the years before, unless, of course, their pranks were already banned. A skinny comic genius called Barry came along and took control of our enthusiastic group. He traveled all around until a faultless place was found, which contained a perfect-looking, naive group. A group of younger men were digging up a road. Beside them was a men at work sign. We approached them and warned them all. The students were afoot and already headed inbound. But we warned them that they dressed like policemen and may feign to falsely make arrests or stops. And having set this team, we were all very keen to invoke the trick by calling up the cops. We rang and were put through to the sergeant and warned that students digging up the road had stopped the public traffic on the highway, so quickly out the riot squad strode. The riot squad strode. We withdrew to a private destination to film the crazy conflict that ensued. The cacophony and melee was amazing. A bizarre dramatic scene was then reviewed. The comedic Barry Humphreys was our leader, who made comedy his strength for all its worth. And Sir Les Patterson and Dame Edna Everidge are some characters to whom he gave birth. And Bob.
Great read there, Lauren. And Big E, too, wrote to the prompt, through their antics, tricksters help us to question life, embrace uncertainty, and become receptive to seeing everything just as it is. And Jean, your thoughts on this poem?
You know, I have to say, I like how it started out. You know, they called it Prosh Week at UNA, a time for trigger. And the smartest and the wildest students land. The most outlandish pranks, far better than the years before. Unless, of course, the pranks were already banned. You know, it really sets the stage for everything from there forward, at least in my opinion. And, you know, and then I liked, but we warned them that they dress like policemen. They feign to falsely make arrest their stops. And having set the scene, we were all very keen to invoke the trick by calling them. You know, so they turned them in, you know. And I thought that was kind of, well, kind of comical. I don't know if I'd like to be on the receiving end of it, but hey. but definitely like the way it ended. You know, because the title gives you like this moment of, huh? And at the end, he pulls it in and straightens it out. The comedic Barry Humphreys with our leader. Good Lord. Wait, let me turn on my eyeballs. Just kidding. But anyway, I thought it was a nice piece. It was well done.
Absolutely. And I do have to agree with you that the beginning really sets the stage, and the title does make you do a double take. But yeah. Because it definitely is, you know, when the characters that you come up with are basically like children that you give birth to, but a whole hell of a lot less painful, that's for sure. but a great comment there. And Lauren, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, your comment on the title just The Man Who Gave Birth. Really eases my mind because I had some crazy notions before this started. You know, I'm basically looking at the equipment and wondering how it was all going to happen. This is a classic practical joke from the point of view that each party is fooled or lied to instead of just one having a prank played on them. A prank is created that puts them at odds with each other, and I'll tell you what. If you've got a bunch of young, muscular guys digging up a road with a men at work sign, when you screw around with men at work, there's apt to be some price to pay, some real penalties from fists, if you know what I mean. I can only imagine the students as policemen confront the students as, well, you know what I mean. Each of the parties bearing a different identity for the sake of the joke. And now, going back to that title, The Man Who Gave Birth, I have to believe at this point that Barry Humphreys is a real person, a comedian, and probably had some characters, in this case, Les Patterson and Dame Edna Everidge, who were well known to his audience, characters he played, but because, and I assume he's English, because these aren't characters I ever heard of, but they seem to be very, very real based on the context in which you think. All in all,
right.
Nicely put together piece.
Yeah, it could also be that they were just famous in their small circle, but I don't know for sure. I guess I'd have to look it up, too. But, Yeah, great
well,
comment there.
Well, you got a detective
there,
in blue tonight. It's probably technical.
It's what?
Gene is probably checking the veracity of my statement.
Yeah.
Well, I'm being good. But I am curious about the characters. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I am. And, yeah. I feel like the names do sound familiar, Les Patterson and Dame Edna Everidge, but I can't think of where from. But, yeah. But I do like this. It's a wonderful story, right? I like how he brings us into the midst of this wild, crazy week of Prosh week at uni, where, you know, and there's expectations for how grand the pranks are going to be and how, you know, they're going to outdo each other. But, of course, keeping in mind which pranks have been banned the years before. And, you know, all the way through, it's great storytelling. He really sets us up well for the ending and the whole idea. And, you know, there's always that one friend. In every group, there is always that one friend who's like the class clown and, you know, who knows how to just play the right jokes and, you know, get everybody laughing. And, I found this one wonderfully entertaining, and it fits well with the prompt, but it brings it into a realistic setting. That's what I'm trying to say. It brings it into a realistic setting. Oh, okay. So Barry Humphries was a real person. Who was a comedian and played characters of Dame Edna Everage and Sir Les Patterson. So there you go. And he was from Australia.
Yep.
That's about as far away from us as you can get.
Yeah, no wonder we hadn't heard of him. Interesting. Very cool. Well, learn something new. Ah. Very cool.
Yeah. We never know what we might learn here on this radio.
That's right. And that's why, you know, I always enjoy, you know, like, and appreciate when people share poetry with us that has something different from what we usually see, because, you know, you learn something new, you get entertained. I mean, it's just good stuff.
Nice. Okay.
All right. Up next, we have Discovery by Ken Smith. And it goes like this. DNA of an infant found dates back to ancestral Native American heritage 20,000 years ago on the North American plate. People crossed the dried up shallow waters of the Bering Land Bridge, a plain with tundra plants 620 miles wide. The infant likely shared Asian characteristics in the narrow slit of the eye, where the eyes have narrowed, now in cynicism. How the North American land plate 620 miles wide was not bounty enough to slake the greed of humans, no progression. Why it is like the shaman trickster riding his horse backwards, end poem. And I have to say, this one was certainly a very, very intriguing write to me. I thought very, very intriguing and thought-provoking. And he wrote to, the picture he has up was actually an artistic rendering of Nana Bozo, which is a Native American trickster that took many animal forms, but more often the form of a rabbit. And Laurent, your thoughts on this poem?
I think the artwork is almost unique in its style. I really like it. To begin with, DNA of an infant found dates back to ancestral Native American heritage 20,000 years ago. It is a leap of the imagination, but it's bolstered by science. The land bridge in the Bering Straits that he describes is completely accurate, given its size. Given the discovery by the humans who lived there, and bringing in the Asian characteristics, the narrow slit of the eyes, where the eyes are narrowed, and then follows it up with Now and Cynicism, which is really good, how the North American land fact was not bounty enough, regardless of its size, to slake the greed of humans. The ending caught me by surprise. Why it is like the shaman trickster riding his horse backwards, always looking where he came from, never looking ahead. I found that intriguing. I found the entire poem a little different for the sake of the contest, certainly, but well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
First of all, I'm looking around. I like the artwork on this. I thought it was pretty interesting. This seems like almost like it's fact-based, all the way through, just about, but, just the way it's written gives you that. And, just like the greed of humans, no progression. Why is it like the shaman trickster riding his horse backwards? Well, that's a good question. And you're saying how you look behind it, looking behind it instead of ahead of them. But we learn from our past. So maybe that's some kind of a thing there. I don't know. But it was a well-written piece, for sure. I'd never heard of this trickster. Then again, there's a lot of them you're probably going to mention that I have not heard of. And I thought it was pretty interesting. The DNA of an infant sound dates back to an ancestral Native American heritage. 20,000 years ago on the North American plate. And then he goes into the 620-mile wide space. And then he brings it up again. So kind of intriguing how he did that. There must be a lot of something, based in that.
Hey, Jean.
Yes.
You could say that a shaman trickster who rides his horse backwards is effectively completely anonymous. No one sees him coming. They only see his back. They don't know who it is.
That's very true. I mean, what do I know about how he really intended it? But I think it's intriguing that he would end on that note, because we have the end stanza, and we have really, because it's based on a trickster, we don't really have any other mention of the trickster until you get to that last thing. You really don't. And the image at the top and the final stanza here are what bracket the whole poem. And the poem seems like kind of serious stuff. So there has to be something there that I'm just not aware of. Now, in Tennessee, how the North American land plate, 620 miles wide, was not mapped enough. So it all has to loop around that final stanza. I have to say that. Great. The whole thought of the church. There's more to it.
Not hearing you real good, Jean.
Bonus right here. Right here. I cannot help it. Anyway, stay home, and thanks for sharing with us. I appreciate that, Ken. And well done. Definitely gave us something to think about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, it's interesting. There's this wonderful attention to detail as he takes us way back in history and looks at the development of different nations and different cultures. I did like the reference to the shaman trickster riding his horse backwards. The interesting thing about a lot of Native American cultures is that if you look at the history, a lot of the people that the shamans were often very eccentric and would be the type of people that we might condemn in modern society as having, mental illnesses. So it's fascinating to me, and I can't help but wonder if maybe there's supposed to be a message here about how the biggest trickster is history itself or maybe nature itself, because, you know, we don't necessarily have 100% proof of how things happened, how people, you know, traveled, you know, all that way, or, you know, I mean, there's so much mystery out there when you look at history and you look at the world and you look at the way different cultures developed, and, you know, that it's almost, you got to question whether the biggest trickster of all is just simply nature. But fascinating, right, and very well done.
Right.
Yeah. Do, 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 do. All right. And did I grab the next poem? I did not. See, I was so distracted with thinking on that one that I did not grab the next one. So let me go ahead and do that. And do, do, do. All right. Next, we have Low-Key Loki by Unexpected Bill. And go ahead, Gene, and give that a read for us, please.
Okie doke. Low-Key Loki by Unexpected Bill. Thor, thunder, hammered god, looking, lurking, lowly, low-key, angel, devil, Norse god, Alpha, Beta, Odin's son, frozen, chosen, king, adopt, giant, deviant, oldest, cross, trickster, mister.
Great read there, Gene. This is another entertaining another entertaining write, and I love that he put in his AN, I chose a Norse god for this delightful look into mischief and chaos. And I like how he played with the wording, like even the title, Low-Key Loki, was
right.
Great. The alliteration, I mean, basically with using one word at a time, and this had a great flow to it with using one word at a time. He created
right.
the image of Thor and Loki and their relationship and how they are kind of that representation of good and evil. Though as he says in his AN, and this is very much true, is that Loki, especially in the movie adaption from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I think also in the in most of the lore, he really is, he's a neutral, you know what I mean? Like he's good when he has to be, he's bad when he has to be. I did like the L, looking, lurking, lowly, low-key, and then angel, devil, Norse god, alpha, beta. And you get to alpha, beta, and you instantly want to start going alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Yeah. It's just wonderfully entertaining, and the fact that he could, you know, kind of give us, it's like having a snapshot. It's like somebody took a family portrait of Loki and Thor, like just, you know, you can imagine them just harassing each other like brothers. So very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I like the wordplay. That's what this is, really, from beginning to end, top to bottom, the Low-Key Loki. There's got to be a name, and I don't know what it is, for two words that are spelled differently, yet sound exactly alike. There must be a definitive
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Right.
Because your mind wants to say Low-Key Loki.
I'm a name.
Because of the syllable length. But if you're just reading normally, Low-Key Loki is, you know, they're identical. I really like that. I like the fact a lot of the characteristics that he admires of Loki and how he's handled by Tom Hiddleston is flawless. It's kind of reflected in the I don't know, to me, I see an appreciation for Loki in this this particular piece with a very novel form. Structurally, perfect for Gene.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Great comment. And the word is homophone. Words
yep.
that sound the same are homophones.
Now, you know, it's funny because if I walk up to the stage and say, are you a homophone, I'm not able to get hit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Yep.
Chances
yep,
are good.
Great comment. And, Gene, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
You know, when I was reading the piece, I thought it was kind of clever that he only used one line, or one word per line. Except for that, I think there's one line that has two words. I thought it was a kind of a clever thought for the piece itself, because it gave the reader, you know, that space for each one to process, you know, before he moved into the next line. And I thought it was clever in that respect. He didn't miss much about Loki. I think it was a good piece all the way through. I think that he kind of nailed all the descriptors, you know, that went along with the thought. So, well done, and thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Great comment. And, yeah, I really appreciate all the poets who write for our shows.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Up next, we have Passion Panhandled by Eric Svensson. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read.
All right. Passion Panhandle. Oh, beautiful Billy Goatish Pan, my nature boy man, at home with you in the wilds we relay play. By the starry heavens with its complex intimacies side by side. Fixture tripping, Jovial's Jekylls. Jovial Jekylls heckle, hide and seek. Peekaboo peep at Athenian youth's awakening approach. Pearlescent pubescence drops to their knees, seeking your flighty presence in the grotto on the northern slope of the Acropolis. Fixture, adroit, panhandle passion, clever ruses cajole, amphitheater woodlands carols unsuspecting senses, fallen tree trunks shift shape, jays lounges converge, passions urge. Anesthetized by soft, sensual panpipe melodies. Breezy brooks, happy turtle gurgles, desensitizes brutish proclivities. Billy Goatish extraordinaire, beloved luscious nature boy chooses laissez-faire. Refrain, soars, sonorous sensuality soar. Bring robust tree limbs right out. Let's coyly dance away from sanity's verge. Gay, ghostly mirages, shimmy shaking, fake wild woodlands, pleasure cakes, sensual savants relay play, mysterious tree trunk murmurs fly, playful fingers pry, silky strips of bark strip, silken soft feel arrest, tender touche.
Great read, Laurent. Though I will say I do miss Eric's voice. This would have been a great one for him to make a SoundCloud for, but you definitely did a wonderful read of that. I love the imagery in this, the metaphors, the use of alliteration. It's fun, and there's a sensuality in it, especially in the refrain part. Soar, sonor, sensuality, soar, being robust, tree limbs spread out, let's coyly dance away from sanity's verge. There's a physical and psychological sensuality within the lines that I think fits very well with the topic of Pan. And I really like the word play in trickster, tripping, jovial, Jekyll, heckle, hide, and seek. Hyde, of course, being, you know, Mr. Hyde from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and the whole idea of the different personalities you can imagine a deity like Pan having. And great word choices, breezy brooks, happy turtle gurgles, desensitized, prudish proclivities. You know, you can imagine what it'd be like of really prudish people running into a personality like Pan. I think this is just absolutely delightful. It has a wonderful sense of humor to it and is very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I really like this piece very much. I like this detail told throughout. You know, I love how he started the whole piece out. I was trying to figure out where I wanted to stop here. But, oh, beautiful Billy Goatish Pan, my nature born man, at home with you in the wilds we relay play, fly the starry heavens with its complex intimacy, side by side. And then it goes in trickster, tripping, jovial, Jekyll, heckle, you know, hide and seek, peekaboo, peek. And it goes on, you know, he built this character up a lot in this piece before he broke into that second set of thoughts. And I think that he did a great job with that. You know, he talks about the amphitheater woodland, carols unsuspecting senses, fallen tree trunks, shift shape. I don't know, there's just a lot in it. I thought the imagery was really good. And his use of alliteration is always good. So, I mean, there's no taking that away. So it was great tale told, nice imagery and alliteration. And, yeah, I enjoyed it. And, you know, I like that whole, well, no, I'm not sure. I was trying to figure out if I wanted to pull the top stanzas or the bottom ones for my comment. But I think that they're all really well done. So it's a win-win, no matter which one I choose.
Absolutely.
So great job. Thanks, Eric.
I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Lawrence, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, it's funny that Eric walks a kind of a tightrope here. Pan is beloved of the gay community. And I think we see same-sex love in this. In fact, with the mention of Athenian youths in the Acropolis, let's take a look back at ancient Greece, where man-boy love was not only approved of, it was sought after. And I think you see that in Peekaboo Beep, at Athenian youth's awakening approach. Pearlescent pubescence drops on their knees, seeking your flighty presence in the grotto of the northern slope of the Acropolis. What skill it takes to describe what could be very jarring to some ears, and couch it in language that is completely inoffensive and delicately written and beautifully done. The Pan as the practical joker who anesthetizes with sensual pan-pipe melody, breezy brooks, happy turtle gurgles, desensitizes prudish proclivities, Billy Goatish extraordinaire, beloved luscious nature boy chooses laissez-faire. That's the practical joke involved in the whole thing. I tell you what, you're right, man. This is filled with sexuality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And great observations there. Definitely, Eric does walk that tightrope very well. So.
Well, he walks that. He walks that path.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. So very cool. All right. And up next we have A Trickster's True Reach of Deceit by Lifeless Seeds. And it goes like this. Drowning myself ever slowly with a never-ending bottle of wine tonight, for I am in the trickster's world of delight, with each cup slowly and slightly becoming someone else, someone new. Oh, for this momentary freedom, a blessing. Cheers, my lord, and thank you. my friend Dionysus, may we have a beautiful bounty of fruit and vegetation. Shall we feed the entire nation a night of drink and dance? Tonight shall we all be so lucky to find love and romance. Drink and dance have become all that matters in this moment. We shall worry not, for Bacchus guides and protects us. Praying to thee brings overwhelming freedom and ecstasy. The drunken camp has spread throughout small towns, and with it hidden amongst the many bottles, true identity, insanity. Men and women drunkenly acting upon makeshift stages. A glance into the crowd's eye brings a glimpse of so many rages. Bacchia unleashed, all have become under his trance of his disease. Authorities come to break his false preach. He hasn't yet had his fill, much more to teach and thrill. A fallen town of a trickster, Dionysus, reach and poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
A trickster's true reach of deceit. Kind of says that, you know, the night of drink and dance is going to spread throughout the small towns, and the bottle's true insanity, I think, is what he's referring to as the true reach of deceit, because it drunkenness has its ramifications and its continuations. A glance into the crowd's eye brings a glimpse of so many rages. Bacchia unleashed, all have become under the trance of the disease. He's literally making them drunk to the point where they act in ways that are unnatural, which I guess is something of a practical joke. He's bending people to his will. And, of course, the authorities come to break his false preach. They come to cops to break it all up. Yeah, almost as if to say every town has this character who's going to use drink as the true reach of his disease. I liked it quite a bit.
Absolutely, me too. Great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, there's so much going on in different places in my head here. You know, we got authorities in it. We have men and women drunkenly acting upon makeshift stages. A glance into the crowd's eye brings a glimpse of so many rages. Bacchia unleashed, all has become under his trance of his disease. You know, it's like that's one thing. And, you know, up here, it's my friend Dionysus. May we have, you know, beautiful bounty of fruit and vegetables. You know, it sounds like a hell of a party to me, you know, really. And, you know, then all of a sudden it all ends they call the police, the authorities. You know, go figure. So, a dirty dog. Made it seem like everybody's going to have a good old time, and there it is. All done. I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, well, first of all, I like the artwork that they chose to use. That was artwork that wasn't in the contest. They just found it on their own, and I think it definitely represents well Dionysus, the god of wine. And I believe, if I remember right, Bacchus is the god of wine for the Roman mythology. And
yep.
So they bring that in too. So, yeah, and I thought that was really quite clever. You know, it's interesting because I think this one actually takes a darker look at the trickster. Like, I feel like there's an underlying message on on addiction within these lines, and how, you know, at first it's all fun and games, and then it gets out of control. You know, first it's all about the cheers, the blessings and the fun, the love and the romance, and then, you know, the feeling that freedom and ecstasy, and then all of a sudden it's like, And I like the use of the makeshift stage and then, you know, looking out at the crowd and seeing all the rage that's there. And I think where it gets to that part, where it says, you know, men and women drunkenly acting upon makeshift stages, a glance into the crowd's eye brings a glimpse of so many rages. It really seems to speak on, to me anyways, mob mentality. And, you know, I mean, you can imagine that the authorities coming in would be like a representation of the law having to intervene. But really quite a fascinating rite and a great take on the chosen prom. Very well done.
By George Kingdom, I think you have it.
Yes, you do. I really
fingers crossed.
Because when you were talking, I'm like, well, that makes perfect sense because it's, the trickster is the alcohol and the, it makes perfect sense. With that. So I like that. And, when you said that, it clicked me into another poem from the other night. I'm like, there you go. Yeah, great job. Great job with that one. I like to take it.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. And I was glad to see that Lifeless Seeds was inspired. So very cool.
Absolutely.
All right. And up next, we have The Semantics of Foolery by Thomas B. And Jean, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. Let me draw.
He never writes short pieces.
He's amazing.
Son of a gun.
I didn't know. I didn't do it. I'm innocent this time.
You're okay. Golden.
The Semantics of Foolery by Thomas B. No direction, chaos, intention, goal, illusion. Thomas reality, fear of loss, before acquisition, doorway open to lies, freedom, pretense, defense, against hopeless, choice dependent upon opportunity. Do I starve today? Do my children may eat? Where is the freedom in that? Don't be fooled, money rules. Everything has a cost. Much is lost in the reason. And
great read there, Dean. And wonderful write by Thomas B. And your thoughts, Laurent?
There's no humor in this whatsoever. It's almost as if there's a bitterness that looks at money and the choices that one is forced to make about where to spend it, how to spend it. Am I free of it? Is it a tool or am I a slave to it? Don't be fooled, money rules. Everything has a cost, much is lost in the reaping. Yeah, we're fooled by what we do. And I think slaves to money, which is the ultimate prank, I guess. Nicely done.
It is. And you're right. This does take a serious look at the topic. It's almost like a response poem to the quote, the trickster's function is to break taboos, create mischief, stir things up. In the end, the trickster gives people what they really want, some sort of freedom. The poem makes me think of that quote that says, you're free to make your own choices. You're not free from the consequences of your choices. And I will comment further, but first I'd like to hear Jean's thoughts.
I was happy with you commenting further. You know, I thought it was
interesting, right? As always. You know, that's just saying. You know, there's so much truth in here, you know, I mean, that, you know, there's no direction, chaos, intention, goals, and reason. You know, that are big and fun, but you can't say that. You have to really think. You can't be foolish. you know, with the money and with what's going on around you. You have to survive. You know, you just have to survive. You know, when it says, do I starve today so my children may eat? Where's the freedom in that? Yeah, well, this kind of puts me in a political mindset, and I'm trying not to go there. Let me just say that. The line didn't go there. But don't be fooled. Money rules. Everything has a cost. How true is that? Yeah, it's very true. I mean, so I think Thomas took a real serious, I think, a serious note on the quick.
He did, definitely. And yet it does have a kind of a political and social commentary to it, or at least it put in that state of mind. You know, it's just a really hard-hitting and edgy line. And I like where he says, freedom, pretense, defense against hopelessness. The pretense, especially freedom, pretense. You know, so oftentimes there's this pretense. And you think you're free because somebody else has convinced you are. But if you need somebody else's convincing, maybe you're not as free as you think. The choices, do I starve today so my children may eat? Where is the freedom in that? And that is so sad because it's like the whole thought of how sadly in many parts of the world, even the United States, there are people who have to choose between getting their medication and, you know, actually, you know, eating. Thankfully, there are services out there for helping, but they're not always, like, easily, you know, like, known about. But this does take a deep look at the whole idea of freedom and free will and how much of it do we actually have. So wonderful, thought-provoking, right, and very well done. All right. Let's see what we have next. Well, up next we have a nice long poem, and I would make Jean read it except for the fact that it has a SoundCloud, so sorry, Laurent. But we have Dance to My Tune by Arcana Amore. And Jean, whenever you're ready to play that SoundCloud.
And you sure you don't want me to read it? No, I'm not. Okay, here we go.
Dance
without you knowing. I'm on course to corrupt your naivety willfully. You're oblivious to all the seeds that I'm sowing. I'm a well-practiced liar, here to deceive, rejoicing in your ridicule. Enraptures me. My mission to misinform and make you believe allows me to feed you with lies, you see. My agendas are small, but my tales are tall, inviting intrigue, makes you howl at the moon. Prepare for a fall when you hear my call. I so enjoy watching you dance to my tune.
Bravo to that. And wonderful performance. Thank you very much, Arcana, for the SoundCloud. Just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Arcana wrote to the prompt, the quote, "Trickster, love will be the end of you." I thought this was great. Not only the reading, which his voice had a mischievous lilt to it that worked well with the theme of the trickster. This had great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery, great choice of background music. I really like his choice of doing a first-person narrative, and so many great lines throughout. I particularly like, though, "My words will replace reason with delusion, leading you to faraway places going nowhere. My games may blur reality with illusion, drifting on the wings of the dying prayer." And also, "While I turn your day into night so skillfully, I'll manipulate your mind with you knowing. I'm on course to corrupt your naivety willfully. You're oblivious to all the seeds that I'm sowing." That sleight of hand and that mischievousness and, you know, that manipulation that is all part of the trickster lure really comes through in this rite. So very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
There's no subterfuge in this anywhere, is there? Each stanza is an admission of what he does, what pleases him, and exactly how he's going to do it. "My words will replace the reason with delusion, leading you to faraway places going nowhere." And that's what he's all about. He's a well-practiced liar. He's here to deceive, rejoicing in your ridicule and enraptures me. And that is the essence of the trickster, rejoicing in the ridicule and enraptures me. "A mission to misinform and make you believe, allow me to feed you the lies you see." What a wonderful piece this is. It's so expertly rhymed. I love the perception, the perspective, of the first person, as you mentioned, and his being brave enough, certain enough, confident enough in himself to lay it out for all the world to see. And I like that.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I thought the piece was wonderful, an amazing take on the trickster. You know, I love how he pulled it all together. Awesome lines all the way through. And the stanza that Laurent quoted, "Trickster, awesome lines." "I'm a well-practiced liar here to deceive. Rejoicing in your ridicule and raptures." My mission to misinform and make you believe allows me to feed you with lies, you see. And then the next one, that final stanza of the whole poem is just, you know, I don't know, just really made it all come together, you know, at the end. My agendas are small, but my tales are tall. Inviting intrigue makes you howl at the moon. Prepare for a fall when you hear my call. I so enjoy watching you dance in my tomb. I said this is top-notch all the way, and I think the audio was awesome. So, well done, Arcana, and thank you so much for sharing. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Really
great time.
Yeah.
It really, yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Lauren, I put your poem up, so go ahead and give it a read for us.
All right.
Called Small God's Delight. Azaban, raccoon with masked eyes, trickster whose banded tail bushed full, busy hands washing his dinner, crunching noisily, small fingers pull, furtive glances to surrounding shrubbery, east and west along the river flow, voices upstream growing nearer, he scurries to where small things go. Unforgiving of Azaban's mischief, Abenaki's tribal trackers, pulling together deep paddle dips, hunting faces or painted attackers. God gone aground in stealth, a minor deity granted, still a trickster god whose death song the warriors chanted. Determination dripped from the mien of his pursuers, ready to skin and leave him hanging from a lodgepole, pale on skewers. Not a folk prone to laughter or the loss of their tribe's ceremonial pipe. A turquoise inlaid red pipestone bowl, Azaban had long planned to snipe. Canoes came ashore, feet stamping, voices raised, curses hurled. They knew his preferred haunts. Searching, they hunted his world. Azaban moved slight, moved silently to the water, casting his voice behind, insulting their ancestors in language most unrefined, swam to the shadow of their birch bark craft, using deft paws and claws, worrying at loose joints, widening gaps, gnawing small holes without pause. Opposing riverbank was distant, but raccoons swim well, let them follow. Third of the way across he was spotted, voices erupted, feet splashing the shallows. Craft launched, surging triumphant, head down, son, work your legs and tail. If they catch you, your pelt is in peril. Ask time, I think, for the birch bark to fail. Consternation, wails, warnings, and anger, sinking midstream, hunters' supplies lost, paddles and heads floating downstream. Azaban laughs as he tallies their cost. Spying a small school of fry, he bent to the task of capture and feast. It was good to be a god in a sense. He was no longer alert, not in the least. He maneuvers to corral would-be trout, while unaware of spying eyes behind trees, falling prey to a keen arrow's flight. Pierced clean through, he falls to his knees. Pipe remains hidden in situ. A small raccoon god's fatal delight. End quote.
Great read and write there, Lawrence. And what a wonderful choice of a trickster to write to. And Jean, your thoughts?
This is a pretty cool. What's that?
I said, you helped with this.
Yes, I did. I did. I think that the story in this is really, I don't want to use the word intriguing because that's not what I find it. I think the story is fun in some ways. I mean, the poor guy killed me in, but it's a tale and it goes on to introduce this character and, you know, his description. And then you find out what he's about. Oh, he's going to swipe that pipe, you know, and apparently those folks just are not happy about it. So it's a great little case from the piece itself. What'd you say to that? I thought you said something. So I find that to be really cool, actually. The story is good. You know, I can't say I like the rhyme because I'd be like, okay. But it was good. I think it was good that it was rhyme because I think it pulled in that little bit of a trickster feel, a raccoon trickster. I mean, let's be real. I think it worked well that way. You know, just, I don't know. I like some of these stanzas a lot. And I thought it came together nicely. So, that's a lot. Good job.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
You're a rough editor. Rough kid.
I know. You made me pull out the whip and chair today. It was amazing.
Got to keep those little trickster raccoons in line.
Yeah. So. Somebody's got to do it.
Yep. But, well, okay. I can say I like the rhyme in this. I think the two of you worked very well together on that. I really like I said, I like your choice of the trickster that you chose, the raccoon. And I can see how in cultures, like the Native American cultures, that the raccoon would be considered a trickster because it really is with its mask and its behavior. And its mannerism, there's something very mischievous and trickster-like about a raccoon. And I like how you bring us, you grab our attention and you keep it all the way through with your descriptions and of what's going on. And Azaban raccoon with masked eyes, trickster whose banded tail bushed full, busy hands washing his dinner. I mean, that just, It describes what everybody imagines, you know, everybody has seen it, who's seen raccoons, but then you go into the mythological element, not a folk prone to laughter or the loss of their tribe ceremonial pipe, a turquoise inlaid red pipestone bowl Azaban had long planned to snipe. You know, here we have him going on his little adventures, setting his little heart on what it is that he wants to get. And sadly, sometimes our pranks, our mischievousness backfires on us. And so absolutely clever, right, and very well done. And would you like to say anything about the poem, Lauren?
I wrote it originally in free verse, and it was not working for me, at all. So that, and since I only decided to write this poem this afternoon for the show tonight, I was kind of under the gun and I threw it together and I didn't maintain. It read kind of like a mishmash and I was properly scolded by Gene and we worked for about an hour, get the rhymes worked out and it worked out. Thank you, Gene.
I didn't scold him. Don't let him tell those lies. But it was fun to do. Just going through and just fine tuning a little bit. It's good. You had some really good bones. Yeah, I was with them. You got good bones. You can do anything. Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely glad you were inspired. And all right. And then up next, I'm going to put my poem. And Jean, when I'm done reading, just if you don't mind, go ahead and leave comments. All right. And this is Eris. She has a twisted sense of humor and an even more twisted mind. She is often seeking trouble, for trouble is often hers to find. She is the daughter of discord, a glint of mischief in her eyes. She starts those petty arguments with a willingness to lie. She has a lilting laughter which hides her ill intent, and with some well-placed words, your will is snatched and bent. There are no invitations sent to this drama queen, but she'll gladly crash a party and cause an epic scene. Never underestimate her as she manipulates the odds and plays games of shame and blame with humankind and gods. She started a 10-year war that launched 1,000 ships, a golden apple tossed with a rather impish flip. She will never hesitate to bring out your worst and laughs with amusement while you feel you've been cursed. Eris is the deity of discord, the sisterhood of strife. She has a luscious adoration for adding lunacy to life. End poem.
I have met this woman. I've met her in the flesh a few times. Laurent, would you like to comment on this?
I'll be more than happy to. I didn't realize you had met this woman.
I have. I have.
It's marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to popular belief, yeah, well, you know that old saying, we have met the enemy and he is us. That appears on this. Pam, I love the way you cast this character perfectly in the first stanza. She has a twisted sense of humor and an even more twisted mind. So right off the bat, we know who she is. And you follow that up with a daughter of discord. And then with some well-placed word, your will is snatched and bent. And that really is the crux of her game. What she says, the well-placed word, the phrase, you know, the allusion to something, and like a hook, it catches the fish. And your will is snatched and bent. You're automatically turned in the direction that she wants you to. Never underestimate her as she manipulates the odds and plays games of shame and blame with humankind and gods. Well, she's all throughout history. Started a 10-year war that launched 1,000 ships, a golden apple tossed with a rather impish flip. I love the way you refer back not only to mythologies, but facts of history, wars of history. The deity of discord, the sisterhood of strife, she has a luscious adoration for adding lunacy to life. For the alliterations combined with the spot-on meanings and references of the words, and just a delightful flow of natural rhyme makes this poem a real pleasure, my dear. If you weren't the host, you'd be winning gold.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
See that? See that? Well, you've got a gold now. We won't give you one. So we're good. You're good. See, that's a plus. I think this was really an awesome write. Excellent stanzas all the way through. I picked up a couple of them, and I said, this is silly. You know, she's the daughter of discord, a glint of mischief in her eyes. She starts those petty arguments with a willingness to lie. She has a lilting laughter which hides her ill intent, and with some well-placed word, your will is snatched and bent. There are no invitations sent to this drama queen, but she'll gladly crash a party and cause an epic scene. You know, I wanted to grab more of the stanzas because everyone was really good. You know, but let's be real. The whole piece is excellent. And I'm with Alan. I'll give you the gold, too.
Well, thank you very much.
There's two of them.
Wait a minute.
I have to go back. I'd have to rethink this maybe just a little bit, you know. There's another one that I might have given a gold to. So, yeah. We'll think about it. Matt, we'll hash this over afterwards and make a decision. Okay?
Right. Too funny. But thank you very much.
Why then?
All right. Well, and up next we have Trickster's Dance of Insight by Zulfikar Hamdam Awan. And go ahead, please, Gene, and give that a read.
Uh-oh. Hang on. I get over there. Can't find it.
All right. A little meat.
Where is it? Damn, I lost the whole group. Oh, you know what? I commented on Sam's piece, and that took up, like, forever to go. Here it is. I found it. Okay, Trickster, Dance of Insight 14 by Zulfikar Hamdam Awan.
embracing life with the antics bold, and their enigma secrets is told. Teach as well these wily sprites to see the world in different lights. Amid the chaos, they find their grace, guiding us to a mindful embrace. With every jest, a truth they share, a mirror held, reflections rare, and laughter's echo, wisdom gleams, revealing lights of the changing streams. So let them lead us, these trickster guides, through twists and turns where insight hides, to see it all just as it is. In their mischief, we find our bliss. And so.
Great read there, Jean. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Well, I'm pretty wowed by this poem, even more so by the picture of the poet. That's got to be one of the more impressive visages I've seen yet on AP, if that is a picture of the gentleman. It is one, not that every stanza is equal and excellent, but the one that reads, with every jest, the truth they share. A mirror held, reflections rare, in laughter's echo, wisdom gleams, revealing life's ever-changing streams. They almost look into the trickster as a guide, because through his tricks, through his mischief, through the twists and turns, there are insights that allow us to see things sometimes as they are, perhaps absurd, perhaps a deadly truth, perhaps a lie, because after all, he refers to them as wily sprites to see the world in different lights. Amid the chaos, they find their grace, guiding us to a mindful embrace. The poem is rather deep, perfectly positioned in its observations of the trickster. There is something that seems almost eternal in the writing of this, as if what is said in the poem has been said in different ways for thousands of years, given the culture that he writes from. I enjoy this.
Absolutely, yes. I've been very impressed with his poetry, Zulfikar, and the fact that he's been supporting the show so much recently by offering up his poems. And great comment there. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought that this was a good piece. You know, as it was nice to pen. I'm glad that these stanzas, they teach us well, these wild sprites, to see the world in different lights. Amid the chaos, they find their grace, guiding us to a mindful embrace. With every jest, the truth they share, a mirror held, reflections rare, and laughter's echo, wisdom gleams, revealing life's ever-changing streams. I think there were some great lines. I don't think he took this, he took this from a different definition of a trickster. I think. And that's probably the cultural thing that's wrong. I think it was well done, and it was really, you know, we'll put together and
do it. Hey, Grant, Jean, not to irritate you, dear, but you sound like you're coming from the bottom of a barrel with about 30 sponges overlaying that voice.
It's the phone, and I can't type because it's in front of me. Okay, I'll be good.
Just to let you know, saying.
I know. I'm trying to keep it here in front of me. It would be the only thing that works. Yeah.
Great comment. And, yeah, I really like this one. The imagery, the rhyme and the flow, the idea of the tricksters being, you know, both mythological, mischievous sprites and, you know, people who think differently and see the world differently. And I really did like that stanza says, they teach us well, these wily sprites, to see the world in different lights. Amid the chaos, they find their grace, guiding us to mindful embrace. With every jest, a truth they share. And I like with every jest, a truth they share, because it makes me think of the idea that sometimes the best way to swallow a bitter truth is with some humor. It shows the importance of not only tricksters, but court jesters, comedians, all of those throughout history who have presented the difficult issues with humor. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Very cool.
Let's see here. Up next, we have Pan and Syrinx by Ima Rima. And Laurent, go ahead, please, and give that a read.
Yeah.
All righty, keystroke, period. Thank you for your patience. Pan and Syrinx by Ima Rima. Pan, horny god of the wild, ran to the woods and DC Syrinx to court his lustful eye and began a long, long chase. And Syrinx ran to a river where her father, god of the rivers, turned her to marsh reeds. But this subterfuge became flawed when Pan, known for his anger deeds, smashed and broke the marsh reeds apart, tying pieces together in musical pipes, so to outsmart Syrinx, who did lose and Pan did win. Thus Pan, the trickster, played trick of possessing Syrinx's reluctant love. And Paul?
Great read there, Laurent. And Jean.
Yeah, I mispronounced that name all the way through. Syrinx. Syrinx.
You know, you did, maybe. I don't honestly know the exact pronunciation of that name, but if you know it, then yes, you did.
No clue. Wild guess.
And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, this is a great story told. I have to assume there's a true story behind this, Pam. Someone help me out with this.
No, it's a mythology. Yeah, it is one of the mythologies told about Pan.
Yeah, so it definitely was well told. It wasn't a real long piece, but it definitely gave the whole message, and I thought that was good. I didn't know that's where his Pan fight came from. That's pretty clever. Pretty cool to know. And, I think that, it was well put together. It was well written, and as I say, it was a good brevity. It said what it needed to say in not that many words. So, great job, Ima Rima.
Yep. I do like the way that he decided to tell this story in the sonnet form. I thought that worked really well,
right,
to take a classic Greek mythology story and put it in a I think his sonnets are a little more modern, but it still, it works. It does. I like it in that form. I like that he brings, and as you said, just exactly what needed to be said. So great, right? And Laurent, your thoughts?
It's a unique little piece, and horny god of the wild. It is in more modern language, isn't it? Now, Syrinx, who caught the lustful eye of Pan, goes to Dad, a god of the rivers, and turns her to the marsh reeds to disguise her. However, Pan, known for his anger deeds, smashed and broke the marsh reeds apart, taking the woman that he loves, or wants to love, and transforms her into musical pipes, which he puts to his lips and plays all the time, possessing Syrinx, a reluctant love who now plays his tune as he blows into her. It's rather novel and kind of humorous if you think about it, and I do like it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I am glad you brought up that first line, because I was thinking earlier, you really can't get more of an apt description of Pan than horny god
right.
of the wire. You know? It just spot on.
Not quite poetic, but, you know, it worked.
but it worked, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. And up next, we have Court Foolery by Bookworm Dave 227. And it goes like this. His joy came from others, their laughter, painted clown in the court. No chess pieces would honor this role, unlike the pawns, knights, or heaven forbid, bishops, queens, and kings can share a joke with the wise council. But no piece celebrates the jester or the court fool. No monuments celebrating laughter as they blow raspberries at the universe. Jokes and merriment as they remind the court, but no reminders of bygone court jesters or fools, just jokes once played on or told, breaking taboos and taking down the powerful, playing with words and other tools of comedy as drama of war of the board moves ever closer. Their words of fun are replaced. Violent words are now cursed to the wind as emissaries carry the word war. No need for the court humorous. Jesters do not take up the sword or brandish bows, daggers, or cavalry. Along with the bishops, they kneel in prayer and poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Wow. There's some meat on the bone of this piece. Hang on a second. I need to find the line. No piece celebrates the jester or the court fool. No monuments celebrating laughter as the blow raspberries at the universe. The court fool, the court jester, if you take his role, his reason for being in the court in the first place, is to make people, the words, the ladies, laugh. Amuse the king and queen, certainly, but to listen to the conversation as it takes place in the court and to be that voice that ridicules what needs to be ridiculed in the way the last poem that we read looks at viewing the universe in different ways through the light of the absurd, the light of ridicule, the light of tricks. So too was the court jester designed to be a kind of a bellwether to what was going on. If a wise court fool ridiculed a noble for something absolutely asinine that he said, or a proposal that made no sense, a ridicule that would normally cause the noble to have at him with his sword, but noble can't say a word because the king nods and agrees, yes, that was stupid, and I haven't had to say it, but my fool has. Only rarely did fools do enough to the king to say off with his head, I've had enough of this fool. This poem has, I'm sorry for the digression, but breaking taboos and taking down the powerful, playing with the words and other tools of comedy as drama of war, the board moves even closer. He was there to temper things. But in this case, that didn't happen. Wow, it's a public use.
Oh, absolutely. Great observations there, and so true. So, very well said. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought David did a good job with this piece. I found it to be interesting because, you know, there are issues with court jesters, you know. They don't always get out of it alive. But I wanted to grab up the first line in the first stanza. Yeah, you know, bro, end-up comedy is no joke, man. It says, no piece celebrates the jester or the court fool. No monument celebrating laughter as the blow raspberries of the universe. But then I wanted to pick up, like, the next three stanzas, you know? I liked the beginning of this, but then the next three really hadn't. You know, jokes and merriment as they remind the court, but no reminders of bygone court jesters or fools. Just jokes once played on as poles. Breaking taboos and taking down the powerful, playing with words and other tools of comedy as drama of war on the board moves even ever closer. So words are fun, of fun are replaced. Violent words are now pushed in the wind as emissaries carry the words from war. You know. And I love how he ended it, along with the bishop being on the press. You know, I mean, really, it's a well-done piece.
You know, it's well-rooted. So, nice job, Dave, and thanks for sharing.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Yeah, definitely a well-done piece. And I did like the chess reference, you know, and how he points out, you know, throughout this piece, the importance of the humorist, the court jester, the clown throughout history, and how we don't really honor the importance of humor in culture, and how the world has become so sad that as you say, the humor is being taken out of it. It's gotten to the point that, you know, the court humorist is now on their knees in prayer alongside the bishop because there's nothing left for them to do. And I like how Lawrence in his comment delved into the historical aspect and importance of the court jester who, you know, was allowed to say things to the king that other people couldn't say. They were often the ones sent to give messages to the king that nobody else wanted to. And I really like, but no piece celebrates the jester or the court fool, no monument celebrating laughter as they blow raspberries at the universe. And great lines all the way through. And I also like that he brings up with the breaking taboos and taking down the powerful, playing with words and other tools of comedy. You know, I for one hope that the ability to play with words and use those tools of comedy continue on. So wonderful, right, Bookworm Dave, and very well done. And I will have three carryovers, which I'll put on, I'm sure, one of the after midnight shows. I'll let people know when I know. And great show tonight. Thank you, Jean, as always, for being my twisted sister. Thank you, Lawrence, for calling in and joining us. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And make sure to keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And Jean, anything you'd like to say in closing?
Great show, Pam. Great prompts, as always. It was a fun night. Lots of good poetry. And, I mean, what do we have tomorrow morning? We have Keeping It Brief at 10 or 10:30. Which one is it, 10:30? I do it every week.
At 10:30, yep.
10:30 a.m. Eastern time. And then we have The Art of Seduction with Pam Wright, imagine that. And after that, then we have the Heart Center Part Saint after midnight, 12:30, all Eastern time. So I don't know how that fits in with everybody else's time zone, but you'll know where you're at. Because everybody knows where
exactly
I am. So I'm like, I'm tired of hearing it. Anyway, great show, Pam, and really enjoy it.
Yep, and have a good night, everyone.
Okay, good night. Thank you. Thank you, Laurent.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.